Snowball Spa. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Thursday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. Get into all kinds of different things. NBA Finals Game 6 tonight. Is it over? The ratings have been abysmal. Lowest since 2007. Wonder why. You see that Mavs-Rockets trade last night? Ooh. Dallas.
It was described as blockbuster. Would you describe that as a blockbuster trade?
I think it would be described as a blockbuster trade for Dallas, yes. 100%. I think this is the type of move that you see teams that are trying to get over the hump. A move like this helps them do that. Yeah, I think.
Well, what'd we say when they bowed out of the playoffs?
They needed a guy. They needed a guy or two.
They needed a guy.
Christian Wood is a fantastic player. And a lot of people don't have any idea who he is, because his two stops so far in the NBA have been in Detroit and Houston. And Houston when they were terrible after Harden and Westbrook both departed. So That's an interesting trade. U.S. Open is on the course. They have teed off up in Brookline, Mass. At the Country Club. A notable local star will not be participating. We'll do a leaderboard check. I got to thinking about the LIV Golf and how it will pertain to ratings. I've got some interesting questions. And I'm going to allow you to, but if you could, maybe it's the leaderboard early on, maybe it's something different. But if I would allow you to change one of your picks, would you? And who would you change it to? So that's a little bit of something to think about.
Okay.
An interesting development in the NFL yesterday. An early retirement for a reason that a lot of people won't believe. The best sport going started their finals last night. And then also, you know what's fun about summer baseball and softball? I'll tell you.
Okay.
Right off the top. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698. Give us a call. Shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things. Whatever else might be on your mind, feel free to chime in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, a couple ways to stay in touch with the show. Log on to KADSAM.com or download the Paragon app. The app's got it all. Three radio stations all here in Elk City. It's got the Penny News. Brand new edition of the Penny News is hitting the website last night, or I guess Wednesday morning at midnight. Now you can go pick up a free copy of the Penny News, as it's everywhere at your local newsstand. Big Elk TV, Paragon TV on as well during the high school sports season. Live stream it that way through the app, and then also the Skinny on Sports podcast. iTunes, KADSAM.com. You can check us out there if you miss the show entirely. Good morning, Jared.
How are you?
I am a wonderful. Shout out, Compton, Thornbro, and my wife. They don't normally listen. So what's up? I got to say, you should see.
They're listening. You know this?
I know this.
Awesome.
You should see. I need to take a picture of it. Wyatt's hair.
Last I've seen was the mullet was going on, right?
It's now turned into, what did he call it? He called it the rake. You know what that means?
No.
It's still the mullet, but now it's transformed into a mohawk mullet.
A mohawk mullet.
The rake is what he said it is.
The rake?
That's what he said. I don't know. Listen, I'm not an 11-year-old kid. I don't know what the terms are. I just hear them and repeat them.
That's lit.
It's clear to one hundo.
The rake. I got to Google this.
The rake.
The rake hair cut. Let's see what this looks like. I'm getting all kinds of different pictures, so I don't think we're...
Maybe he's not right. The The one positive is the barber.
Yeah.
Did not think he could put a perfect circle of the zero. The rake is bussing. I've got that twice now. The exact same text twice. So that must be a thing. Anyhow, thankfully, Matt wouldn't put a zero in his hair because he wanted his number left.
And his number is zero?
30.
Oh, 30. Okay.
But still. So, you know, sometimes even bad things turn out good.
Yeah. I'd love to see that here.
I know. I'm getting people want photos.
So how, speaking of Wyatt, how'd he do last night?
Fantastic. The Eagles, it was a great game. And when I mentioned, you know what I love about summer baseball, and I'm sure softball is the same way. We played a team in Merritt that has, it's fun to watch not only your team get better, but all the teams around you get better.
I just had that same conversation with one of the coaches from Navajo the other night.
Navajo's yes. Another one, you know, that they, Navajo played Merritt in the game before to play the our team. And it's just like if you guys do have a preseason tournament on the softball side, mm-hmm. That doesn't really happen on the baseball side. But if it did, the gap that our team enjoyed to start the season has closed.
Yeah.
And it's not and not necessarily because our team has gotten worse. I don't think that's the truth at all. But the rest of those teams have gotten so much better as the season has wore along. And kudos to all those coaches and the players and the kids for working the way they clearly have throughout the spring and the summertime, because it was a fun game to watch. One of the very first times, as a matter of fact, I think it was the first time that the game went so fast because, you know, throwing strikes, making plays, that we played five innings. It was the first time all year long that we played the whole five innings. And you know what? I noticed that last summer, being the young guys moving into the kid pitch or the peewees, you know, the games got shorter or went faster as it went along because everyone got more confident. And, you know, next thing you know, you're playing in the regional tournament a bunch of five-inning games because the pitching got more confident, throwing strikes, and quite frankly, the hitting gets worse because there's not as many walks. When the game's moving faster, you know, maybe the attention spans of the fielders don't wane like they could when the game's just kind of slogging along, right? And so, you know, last night on both sides, very few misplays in the field. If you didn't deserve a hit, you didn't get a hit. And that's the way baseball will be later on. And softball will be the same way. And so it was really enjoyable to watch the games that we watched. Congrats to the Sayre Eagles. They were winners of the Pee Wee League. Merritt was second. Navajo was third. And the Canute was the other team that was there. They got beat the night before, so they weren't there last night. But they were put in fourth. And then on the older kids, the Oak City Crushers were the champions. The Cubs beat them once last night. Boy, we're talking about a long night. Our boy Jay Mack probably still in bed, or he ought to be.
Yeah,
because we left at 10, and it was in the top of the fifth inning of the first game.
Oh dear.
And the Cubs won that one, so they had to turn around and play another one last night, which the Crushers won 5-1. So those were the top two. I think Cheyenne would have been third there, if memory serves, just kind of looking over, watching who was playing. I think Cheyenne would have been third in that league. So lots of fun. But that when I put on there, you know what's fun. It's cool to watch them improve.
It is. It is. I was, like I said, I had that same conversation with one of the coaches from Navajo, and because we had played them, you mentioned that preseason tournament, we played them in the finals of that preseason tournament, and it wasn't a high scoring game, and it was kind of same situation. This is the beginning of the year, everyone's playing defense, the bats weren't quite there yet, again because of the beginning of the year for both teams. And then we played them on Tuesday, and man, Navajo can slug it. Of course, our bats were where we thought they'd be, and I told him, man, your bats have come on this. And he's like, yeah, man. And we both agreed, man, isn't it fun to watch these kids just you know, they take what we're coaching them and what we're teaching them. They're coachable and they're learning and they're getting better as the season progresses. Like, yeah, that's the best part of this. It's just, you know, watch them get better and watch them have fun out there and play the game right and in both defensively and offensively. So, yeah. I thought you were going to say like a hot dog or something. That's the best part.
Pulled pork nachos would be my favorite.
There you go.
Just if we're being honest. And by the way,
the walking tacos are fantastic.
The walking
too.
Tacos yes. are a favorite of many.
Yes.
And also, do you have what's God, my mind just went blank. It's the tea, the iced tea.
No, I haven't.
What do they call it? Not ice box. What you put your cold ones in? To carry around. I cannot
cooler?
Think of the word. Ice chest. Ice chest. Golly, I could not think of the
That's
word.
It's like a special name for a tea. Or...
No, ice chest tea is what it's called.
Ice chest tea.
Oh, huh. Man, it is delicious. It's got like oranges in it. I think there might be a little tang possibly with some sweet tea. It is.
I'm going to have to try that tonight.
It is awesome.
Awesome.
Okay, here you there... go. There's.
Okay.
Hang on. You don't really get the full effect until you get the side view.
But, okay. Nice.
The rake.
I like it.
That's what.
The rake. On. Looking good, Wyatt.
Oh, here you go. Ice chest tea. There's, you know the best part about my wife listening?
She's quick.
She'll
to correct
me.
You.
Yep. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. I found out my wife was listening when she came home from the grocery store and had a lot of milk with her.
Yes.
Like, here is in case you're thirsty at 2 a.m.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Good.
I know, but good day. I know that we're not everything's done, but I have connections. And so by the time Friday is over, when we come here Monday, we'll know who everybody that's moving on, everybody that finished, and we'll have a complete list of those teams from both sides, the softball and the baseball.
Yeah, and to our listeners, don't hesitate. You want to give a shout-out to
–
I mean, I know there's teams all the way down to T-ball that have already wrapped up their seasons, and like you said, there's some that will continue to play after this week or today or this weekend. Text and tell us. We'd love to know and give them a shout-out.
Yeah, and keep track of them as they move along.
Yeah. So, yeah, good stuff.
Okay, so I mentioned the best sport going is finally to the championship round.
And it was fun last night.
The NHL. Listen, we've implored everybody throughout the playoffs to watch this. And now I'm even past that. Whatever past imploring, is that begging? Or I would think it would be the other way around. But anyhow.
I got more of a sense of it's your fault if you're not watching this. That, we've told you.
There's some truth to that. Game one last night, Avalanche and Lightning, 4-3. The Avs win in overtime. They had a 3-1 lead before the Tampa Bay came back to tie it and sent it in overtime. Listen, any hockey observer that's been doing this for any amount of time will tell you that this series is the best Stanley Cup final that they've had in decades. Like since the turn of the millennium, for sure, this is the best one, with the best two teams playing at the height of their powers. The Lightning are trying to become just the fourth franchise in NHL history to win three straight Stanley Cups. It hasn't happened since the Islanders back in the early 80s. And then the Avalanche led the league in scoring 4.64 goals per game throughout the regular season. That was the most since 1988 and the Edmonton Oilers. And all they had was, you know, Wayne Gretzky, Mark Messier, Esa Tikkanen, so on and so forth, Jari Kurri, all those guys. I mean, that was one of the best offensive teams of all time. And the Avalanche are right there with what they've done offensively. This is the perfect opportunity for the NHL to be able to kind of gain the footprint they lost when they cut ties with ESPN. There's no real secret. Gary Bettman, the commissioner, this week came out and said $5.2 billion worth of revenue this season for the league. It's the most that it's been in years. Well, obviously, because you're not having to find a Stanley Cup playoff game on Fox Sports, New England, Southwest, whatever else. It's on ESPN or TNT.
Right.
And the perfect time for this to come back into the consciousness of American sports fans, because I think there's a lot of people that are kind of turned off by the political nature of what the NBA has become. I got a text last night that said, man, that hockey game is great. I've watched way more hockey than basketball playoffs because I'm tired of the athletes.
Agreed.
Like, being just lecturing me about my I don't want to hear it. I want to watch him play basketball. And it's like you can't escape it. Here's how you escape it, is watch this. And it's not only is hockey fun, but this particular series is going to be so much fun.
If anything, if last night's game is any indicator of how this series is going to be, as far as the fun factor is, it's going to be at maybe 11, you know, cranked it up to 11. Because when Avalanche came out 3-1, did you feel like, oh, boy, it's just going to be all Colorado, and then here comes Tampa Bay, and then we a scoreless third period. I mean, I was like, all right, here we go. Bonus hockey. And I went to the garage. I cranked it up. As soon as I sat down, what, barely 2 minutes in, they score a goal. But that's hockey, man, the sudden death of an overtime. It was so fun. And I hope that is like this every single game.
Listen, even if you don't watch the whole game, okay, I get it. I mean, it's 20-minute periods. It's a 2.5-hour endeavor. But even if you don't watch the whole game, and especially on a night like last night, do yourself a favor and watch the overtimes. I mean, overtime Stanley Cup Finals.
Drop
hockey,
what you're doing.
Because you're right. Because
if you blink, you could miss.
It's over.
Yeah, it could be over.
That's the awesome nature of it is it could. And listen, last night was probably an anomaly because sometimes it turns into a marathon where it's one overtime period, two overtime. You know, and it's like, oh my gosh. But it's so intense watching it because you know. Every time the puck moves might be the end.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's nothing else really like that. You know, yes, there's a clock, but the clock doesn't stop the game. Like it's, you know, in the NBA, well, when the clock hits zero, the game's over. That's not the way this goes. You know, it's like baseball in that sense where, yes, there's a clock, but it doesn't really matter in the overtimes because somebody has to score.
Right.
So it's a little bit like baseball except for – way more enjoyable or exciting, let's say it like that. I mean, but
that's the thing about hockey is when you get locked in and you're watching, it could suck you in and you're all of a sudden that 20 minutes you just mentioned is gone like that of a period.
That is it reminds me, you know, when we always talk about this like state tournament basketball time with the small schools, how fast it seems like those games go.
Yeah.
The overtime hockey is like that too because you see 20 minutes and all of a sudden, yeah, you look up and you're like, oh, my gosh, there's 3 minutes left in this period.
Yeah.
What just happened?
Well, that's what happened to me in the third period because that was fun having a scoreless third because I was watching it, and like, oh, shot on goal. Oh, okay. And then all of a sudden I look up like, there's 2 minutes left. I mean, holy moly.
We're about to overtime.
Yeah. I mean, where are all the goals from the first two periods? And then went to overtime and the rest is history.
But 4-3, you know – that's going to be the norm in the series, I think. You know, that one thing that you hear about, you know, people that are detractors of hockey or soccer is a lot the same way. Man, you know, 1-0 and that's it. Or they get, you know, scoreless tie or whatever. That's not the way the series is going to be. And you might get a 2-1 mixed in there, but for the most part, I think you're going to have – it's going to be up and down, back and forth, and there's going to be goals scored, even though the goaltending – especially on the Tampa Bay side, is the best that there is in the league right now. That just tells you how good Colorado's offense is to put 4 on the board against what everybody considers is the best goaltender in the NHL. In the NHL.
There you go.
But lots of fun. Lots of fun. And if you've never – listen, there's really not that many rules, right? I mean, when you hear the word – when it's icing, that means it goes across too many lines. 3. If they're not past the center line, going in, and they hit it past the end line, and the defense touches it, they stop the game, and they go to the other end. Offsides, the puck has to be past the blue line before all the skaters can get in there on the offensive side. Outside of that, those are the two that people are like, what does that mean? Well, that's what that means.
Yeah, and you'll quickly learn when you start seeing penalties and why they're going to the penalty box. And I've noticed this. When you're on a national broadcast, they understand there's a lot of novice fans, and they'll start explaining stuff like what high-sticking is, illegal and illegal ways of checking, which is basically tackling in hockey. So there's good ways to that they explain that.
And
have I told you how I've learned hockey? I've told you this, haven't I?
Huh.
I remember I've always watched hockey, and there are rules like icing and what is offsides. It was kind of like, what's going on here? I went and bought a hockey video game
Oh, yeah.
And played that thing over and over until I realized, what the rules were, because I was getting penalized for being offsides, mm-hmm. or I was getting penalized for icing or clearing the puck that went over the glass, happened last night there at the end of the third. Like, why is that a penalty? Stuff like that. So I started to figure out the rules of hockey, which made it much more interesting for me.
Yeah, and as you go, I mean, listen, if you've never really watched it, you start watching it, it's going to be a little bit hard to follow because it moves so fast. But you really start to, as you watch a little bit, you kind of can anticipate, okay, here's what's happening. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, you may not actually see the puck go in the goal because they smoke it so fast.
Yes. Could you imagine trying to stop one of those?
No.
Even with all that gear on as a goalie?
And quite honestly, it's very rare for goals to happen when the goaltender can actually see the puck coming. You know what I'm saying?
Like, right.
Most of them, there's people everywhere, or it gets deflected or whatever, and he just doesn't see it. Because, like, if it's one-on-one, the goalie stops it way more often than the guy scores.
Yep.
Because they're just so unbelievable
their
at what they do.
Their reaction is just amazing. Oh.
But do yourself a favor. If you're kind of in the lull of, God, I want to watch the NBA Finals, but I'm turned off by it, or, man, I'm sick of the Thunder not being any good, I'm ready, you know, whatever you're thinking there, watch the NHL Stanley Cup Finals.
And I think the way this maps out now, I know there's not much overlap. Obviously, if Golden State wins tonight, it's over. But they do it where, you know, they're not happening at the same time. Right. I don't think there is. If there's a Game 7, it would be at the same time as a Game 2 or 3.
No, well, no, not anymore because the NBA is so far ahead.
Right. That's what I'm saying. But, yeah, you're right. If it's,
I mean, they play every other day.
I'm with whoever told you that. I've watched a lot more hockey than basketball, and mainly because Thunder's not in it, right? I mean, I've paid attention to basketball enough to know who's doing what, but I'm not sitting down to watch the entire game. I tune in to go, what's the score? I'll go to my phone, how is Draymond doing tonight? You know, stuff like that. But hockey, I'll turn it on, and I'll leave it on.
Yeah, it's great. It really, do yourself a favor and watch just a little bit of it, especially this series, because it's going to be so fantastic. One last story here before we get into the U.S. Open and take a break. Yesterday, this was amazing. I think you were leaving, and I said, hey, have you seen this?
Mm, yeah.
So Indianapolis Colts starting safety. So it's not like this guy was some sort of practice teamer. This guy was the starting safety for 3 seasons for the Indianapolis Colts, Kari Willis. He announced his retirement at the age of 26. And before I read the story, so you're immediately thinking to me, okay, has he, you know, is this concussion related?
Injury, yeah.
It's something like that. No. Here's from his Instagram post. I'm not going to say the first few words just because it would give it away.
Okay.
I have elected to officially retire from the NFL as I endeavor to devote the remainder of my life to the further advancement of the gospel of Jesus Christ. It starts out with much prayer and deliberation. I was afraid that'd give it away. I mean, how refreshing of a story is this?
Very refreshing. You're kind of quizzing me, asking me the same, like, well, why would you think he quit? And I thought, well, maybe he's thought, I've made enough money, I want to be a family man. And he had other opportunities he could use his degree on or something. I don't know. But not knowing if he has a degree or not. But that is very refreshing. Very refreshing. It's a shame because it won't get enough attention.
No. And at a time when you juxtapose this story to the biggest story in the NFL, which is the escapades and whatever else you want to call it, of Deshaun Watson, which does get all the headlines. And instead, it's, I mean, listen, and this guy, you mentioned the money. It's not like this guy was rolling in dough. He was a fourth-round pick in 2019. He hadn't even got to the time where a starting safety gets paid. He became the starter halfway through his rookie season, held that position down the next 2 years. So he was entering into his fourth season.
A lot of NFL ahead
as a fourth-round pick.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's made a mint.
Right.
But that's just, it's such a cool story.
It is.
And he continued, I'm both humbled and excited to pursue the holy call that God has for my life, which brings me much joy and purpose. Thank you for all your support over the years. You're right. This story will not get the press that it deserves, but kudos to Kari Willis. just a cool, about the time you think, gah, sports is a cesspool, everything is negative. Something like this happens, and right. It kind of warms your heart. It's a little bit like when you decide that the youth of America are totally done, and then you stop by Chick-fil-A and you go, you know what, never mind. We got some good ones left.
That's true.
122nd U.S. Open has teed off at the Country Club at Brookline, a mass eclectic leaderboard so far. Some guy named Matthew Neesmith is tied for the lead with Colin Morikawa and an amateur, Stuart Haugestad.
Man, did he summon the ghost of
Francis Ouimet?
Ouimet.
Could it happen? Shot back, David Lingmerth. He played at Arkansas, Swedish guy. Everybody's pre-tournament, or most people's pre-tournament favorite, Rory. And also Joaquin Niemann. They're both at 2 under par, a shot back. Then you've got a host of folks, including the defending champ, John Rahm, Max Homa, Joel Dahmen. Damon? Is it Damon? He's the one that wears the crazy hat. They're at 1 under. Some other guys at even par that you never heard of. A couple of, here's more amateurs. Travis Vick, he's a Texas guy. Sam Bennett. James Piott, he's the defending U.S. amateur champ. Patrick Cantlay. Daniel Berger. Adam Scott, Stuart Sink, da-da-da. Then down to 1 overs, Hideki X, Will Zalatoris, Mark Leishman. 2 overs, Jordan Spieth, Cameron Young, Roger Sloan, know him?
I've heard of that name.
Doesn't Roger Sloan seem like a guy that was probably played James Bond at one point in his life? local flavor, Chris Goddard, +3.
3 over.
Yeah. Did you see who teed off first?
No.
So it was Michael Thorbjornsson, amateur, 20, from Massachusetts, from right there close, with Fran Quinn, 57-year-old Massachusetts native, who also qualified through the open qualifying process. They teed off together right first off.
That's cool.
They're both 4 and 5 over, having a little bit of trouble. So U.S. Open underway. Interesting, because I told you off the air before we got the show started, Colin Morikawa is a guy that I think is fantastic. Yeah, I think even as a young guy, people know who he is,
yeah.
but he doesn't get the notoriety of a guy that's already won 2 majors at like 24 years old.
Right.
And he's a great iron player, seemed to fit this golf course with the small greens, you know, the better iron players can control it and da-da-da. Well, So I had him on my top three. And then I read an article. It was detailing his pre-tournament press conference. And he was talking about how he can't hit his cut. He's always been a guy that played just a little bit of a left or right shot. That's what he was comfortable with playing. But he can't hit it. And he struggled a little bit here to start the season. You know, he made a run at the Masters toward the end. But he hasn't really been kind of up to the form that you expect of a guy like that. And part of it, he said, was because he was trying to force hitting the cut. So now he's just playing a draw. And he said he and his coach can't figure out what's going on. Like, and to me, that's like, wait a minute. That's not the recipe for success at a U.S. Open. But to his credit, if you keep on reading, he said, I've had to teach myself, you got to go with what you got that day.
Sure.
And if you read anything from Jack Nicklaus, Tiger, the greats of the greats, they will talk about how certain times they just had to scrap any plan that they had and play with what they had that day to shoot the best score they could that day and then try to fix whatever the problem was later. And it feels like Morikawa has kind of figured that out himself. So
he's tied for lead. I mean,
it's just that
it's early, but
when you read that, you're, I mean, as far as picking a guy to win the U.S. Open, in my mind, it immediately goes to, oh no, that's not what you want to be standing up on.
He's immediately giving you an excuse why he's going to lose. Is
yeah.
what you
well,
read.
I mean, yeah, just uncomfortableness.
Yeah,
because it's not something that he's accustomed to doing at all. He's always been a cutter, and to convince yourself to aim to the other side of pins or greens or fairways or whatever and pull it off, It's pretty amazing that he's right there. And listen, the dude is incredibly talented. We all know that. I mean, he's on the fast track to tons of major success. It just that kind of gave me pause. But so far, so good for Morikawa. Do you think, you know, since 1996, the end of the season in 96, and then especially after Augusta in 97 when Tiger had that incredible win, golf's always had him as the crutch, as the ratings crutch, as the driving force behind more and more and more money being spent on PGA Tour events, on majors, or what have you.
I think it has an effect, absolutely. Imagine what ticket sales and viewership would be like if he had not shown up in Tulsa. Imagine I would love to see the influx of money spent, whether it be on hotels, anything in the city of Tulsa, and of course ticket sales, the very day Tiger showed up just to hit a practice round. So yeah, I mean he has an effect. He moves the needle and the ratings go up or down, but I think ratings are still going to be strong. I think that's what you're asking me. Are they still going to be strong even though he's not in this event?
I think one thing is going to buoy those ratings, and it's going to be something nobody wants to hear.
If it's going to be Phil at the top, or
the LIV Golf Tour, I think has given this event some juice that it would have never had without Tiger. You know, you think mm-hmm. about the majors without him over the past 25 years. There isn't the buzz. Sure. There's a little bit of, oh, okay, right. Well, that's great, but you didn't beat him. You know, type of thing, or that's great, but we didn't get to see him play. And interestingly enough, because of last week and because of this tour coming on online and playing that event, you know what you haven't heard all week long? A thing about Tiger not being there.
It's true.
And so, in my mind, dating, if we want to go back pre-Tiger, I don't think it's fair to do that because he brought so many different sets of eyeballs to the sport throughout his time playing. But I think you got to start looking back at the tournaments he missed, the majors he missed in his run. I would not be shocked at all if the ratings for this U.S. Open are the highest ratings for a major Tiger didn't play.
For a non-Tiger major.
For a non-Tiger major. I really do, because I think that's the thing that nobody wants to admit, especially the PGA Tour lovers, the Chamblees, or whoever else that is just, I mean, dead set against what's happening with LIV. I think they're going to have to admit a little that the LIV Golf and the guys gave it a little bit of juice. And so here's another question I have. Is LIV Golf what keeps the sport relevant after Tiger? Because that's always been a huge issue that you knew was looming out there, that's getting closer. The objects in the rearview mirror are closer than they appear.
Yeah.
And that's getting closer than anybody wants to admit. So can this kind of be the thing that creates the rivalry that golf fans so badly have wanted for Tiger all these years? And it's been somebody else, you know, depending on what time of his career it's been, whether Vijay or Ernie or Phil or whoever. Can LIV be what kind of keeps this thing on the track?
This feels kind of like a WWF, WCW
type
thing. You know, you got some wrestlers going over to the other side and vice versa. Yeah, a little bit. But the thing what Tiger did when he came on was he propelled the sport to an international level, right? I mean, it was at an international level before that. Don't kid yourself. But it was mainly in the United States and Europe. Mainly England. That area, you know, United Kingdom.
And some Australia down there as well.
Yeah, yeah. And he brought the whole world into it. You know, there's people everywhere who tune in to watch Tiger. So, I mean, if you want to give credit to the LIV for anything, it's they can continue that without Tiger, don't you think?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I think this is... Everyone's been
looking for... I'm all about propelling the game, right? I'm all about expanding it and making, you know, keeping it relevant after Tiger and keeping it where people, kids, still want to play, still mm-hmm. want to pick up clubs and go play. I think the LIV can do that over, you know, mainly their events will be you know, international events. I know they got one coming up in Oregon. But I think, you know, if you can keep that interest there, keep that going, I don't have a problem
with
it.
Well, and it creates a natural rivalry that isn't forced.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? This is just natural. By the way, a tweet right here. Two players will announce are joining the LIV Golf Series on Monday after the U.S. Open. One of those is a current top 16 official world golf ranking player. That's the stuff that's going to be interesting to see, because when you see what Mike Wan, the USGA director, said on Wednesday when the question was asked, you know, you couldn't get rid of these guys this week. Are you going to try to do that next year? And his answer was yes, as far as making it harder for those guys that play LIV golf to qualify for the U.S. Open. And his answer was absolutely yes. So that makes you wonder, you know, has the USGA and the PGA of America and the Masters and the R&A, have they already started talking about how do we do this? You know, and that's the problem for these guys that do join it without having that answered, is are they going to exclude themselves from the majors? But is the money so big you don't care?
For some, yeah, they don't care. And it depends on where they're at in their career.
Yeah, I think
Phil is clearly what I'm talking about there. He doesn't care. He's on the twilight of his career. He's going to get what he can and call it quits. But there are questions about the younger guys. Do they care?
I think it's going to be interesting, because I think the young guys that don't have any status anywhere, it's a great option for them. And I think the fading stars, it's a great option for them. It's a great retirement plan, as Rory called it this week, for them. The guys in the middle that are in the prime of their careers, that are trying to build a legacy, that's not for them.
Yeah.
And, by the way, who you see standing up against it the most? Rory, JT, John Rahm, Spieth, those type of guys that are right there in the middle of their prime.
And I brought up this question before about character, and does it make you question someone's character? Because think about a kid who's growing up, and all they could think about is, I want to win the Masters, or I want to win the U.S. Open, or I want a Grand Slam. I want it all. And then this LIV thing comes up, and they're risking their dream of hoisting those trophies and wearing those jackets because they want to make more money. And that's where I kind of question character at times. Because if there's a guy that's capable of winning those championships but chooses to go play elsewhere, go play and make a lot of money, like, man, it's a character thing, kind of creeps in my mind.
Here's the question for you to that point. Would you rather win $4.75 million like Charles Schwartzel did just last week? Or would you rather win the $3.1 million prize that goes to the winner this week and, oh, by the way, be labeled a U.S. Open champ for the rest of your life?
Honestly, Aaron, if you asked me that about 10 years ago, I would have said the 4 point whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I'm mature now. I don't know. I would want to have that. I would want Jared Aith, the U.S. Open champion.
To be on, you want your name beside all of the greats of the game that have won that trophy.
Go all the way back.
That's right. I think the one thing you are going to see it's not going to be enough to even get close to level with LIV, but I think you are going to see higher purses coming from the PGA Tour and the major championships.
So be it.
It combat it just a little bit, but not to the level that it is over there. And quite frankly, I'm to the point where I'm not going to tell you it's good for the game, but at the same time, a whole bunch of these people that are being the holier than thou, especially on the writing side or the broadcasting side, on the PGA Tour side of this thing, don't let us start checking your closets for the China skeleton, okay? Because we all know it's there. And this holier-than-thou attitude toward what's happening. And if you want to say, well, it's the government of Saudi, so it is the same thing with China. It's the exact same thing. Now, they may be able to mask it by this corporation or that one, but it's still the government's money that's being spent, okay? It just is. So that part of it is what almost turns me off of the way that the people are defending the tour. I just think they're doing it the wrong way. I think the players are the ones that are actually defending it the correct way and talking about what it means to have your name on that trophy, what it means to win at Jack's Place or at Arnie's at Bay Hill or at Riviera, some of those long-time PGA Tour stops that carry some clout versus just an exhibition. that what it seems like to live golf.
Yeah.
Question on the text line, where does DJ fall, prime or past? Man, it seems like he's, to me, exiting the prime.
Yeah, that's right there at the cusp of, yeah, he's reached the pinnacle, and he's still kind of up there, but he's looking down like, okay, here's my trek. Yeah, does that make sense? Like, you climbed a mountain, you're on top, you reveled in it, you've taken the selfies, and now you're slowly walking down. So I can see, like, okay, I'm still a high-level golfer, and I can go over here and make some high-level money.
Good point by Drew.
That's rare.
If these guys are so prestigious, then why play professional golf at all? Interesting question. Talking about Bobby Jones playing for the prestige of the game as an amateur. I think it's the way it is. I mean, that's kind of not a great answer, but at the time that Bobby Jones was playing golf, the prestige was those amateur, you know, to be that amateur. And the money, I mean, listen, money changes everything. And, you know, winning the U.S. Amateur or winning the British Amateur right now doesn't carry the prestige that it does to win the U.S. Open or the British Open or the Masters. And quite frankly, the money comes along with it. But I guess Drew's point is, well, just play as an amateur then.
True. That's a good point.
If all it is about prestige, play. And so, and that's the thing. There's a fine line to that for these guys. It's easy for Justin Thomas or Rory McIlroy to point fingers about being greedy when they're multimillionaires too. You know, so it's, yeah. You know, some of that, I just don't, the arguments, some of them that are made against the LIV are a little bit kind of shallow to me, because it's like throwing stones from your glass house too. And so that's why, you know, as much as a golf purist as I am, I don't mind it. Because I think it, like I said, and that's why I asked you the question about the you know, post-Tiger, I think this could be the avenue to keep golf in the stratosphere that it is post-Tiger. Because here's the truth. He doesn't move the needle. He is the needle.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe LIV could help keep that needle from falling back to the left enough without him in the U.S. Open.
Right.
Last question about it, and we'll move on. If you could change one of your picks from yesterday, who would you sub somebody in or sub somebody out?
I think it's too early for me to answer that question because I only have one guy playing. I think. Where's Tommy? Where's Fleetwood? I mean, Rory's still – I mean, I'd obviously keep Rory. He's 2 under, 1 off the lead, 1 tie in the lead. Brooks hasn't teed off. Cam Smith hasn't teed off, so I still got hope. But if you're going to twist my arm, I would probably swap Koepka for John Rahm.
Put Rahm in.
Yeah,
take Koepka.
Why didn't I think about the defending champ in this thing? Maybe because it's always a different course. We kind of touched on that yesterday. But maybe that's what I would do. Because Brooks has a way of letting you down. Kind of like Rory.
I would.
But John Rahm's always been consistently at the top. Right now he's 1 under, tied for 7th.
Yeah, this has nothing to do with the leaderboard because this guy's 1 over par through 11 holes and tied 29th. But I would take out Will Zalatoris and put in Xander Schauffele.
Okay.
And here's why. Over the last 5 U.S. Opens, Xander Schauffele has went tied 5th, tied 6th, tied 3rd, 5th, tied 7th.
There you go.
I can't believe neither one of us realized that.
Can't believe you didn't realize that.
I know. And I always pick him, too.
You do.
I always pick Xander Schauffele. I got caught up in the Will Zalatoris, Justin Thomas.
Anxious to watch this, but I'm not going to rent or buy Peacock.
Peacock Premium is getting bad reviews so far from the golf Twitter sphere because there's way too many commercials. Why am I paying premium for commercials?
Yeah.
Text line is blowing up about this conversation. If I could get paid $125,000 to show up to work, I'm all in regardless. If I could do a good job or not, I'm in. Don't like who's backing it, but don't blame the guys for getting the money. I'm a lot that way. And a lot of it is because I think it's 6 of 1, half a dozen of the other when you look at the people generating a lot of the revenues on the PGA Tour. China is behind a bunch of it. It's just the truth. And it's in every walk of life that you don't even realize. Mm-hmm. And so now all of a sudden, we're gonna get out our pitchforks and start dogging guys for taking Saudi money when your pockets are being lined by China? Okay. The same thing. But I do think that there's, I mean, I guess in my mind, if those guys are allowed to play the majors, then, boy, I'm going to have a hard time criticizing them because they could play, you know, way less events, less holes for those events. You know, I was and still get to play
so
the.
It still shows you that they still see that the majors are prestigious to them. That's sure. What you're looking for.
And yeah. Also, a big. I saw Jason Duffner yesterday tweeting a bunch about this. And he had something that I never really thought about, but it also pertains to the majors. And they kind of go hand in hand. And he was talking about if there is established world golf ranking points that go along with the LIV series, then you're going to see you could see an exodus from the PGA Tour because of the money and because that's the way to get into the majors is by winning. You know, then it matters to win a LIV series event to the guys that'll be playing it outside of money, because now that gets you into the tournaments they all really want to play anyway. And yeah. if you can do it for, 75% of the work and 250% of the money, okay. Who wouldn't do that?
Yeah. Hey, man, I'm all about make that money, all that money, man. I'd never fault anybody for wanting to make money because that's the definition of a capitalist. But
yeah,
I mean, I have my limits of how, like, you know, if it harms other people, and that's a totally different political conversation we can have, but in this case it's not harming anybody, and again, make all the money you can. So it's hard for me to knock him too. I do the character thing because I also think having your name next to something means something too.
Work smarter, not harder.
If you can go all your life and be introduced as Aaron Kauk, Masters champion, I mean, that's pretty prestigious itself. That's huge. Even though it might make you a little less money as compared to what LIV is going to give you. So I've always been kind of on the fence of it, and I just kind of hope at the end of the day this we find a way for this to coexist.
Yeah, I think that's where maybe it's headed, and maybe the majors shut it down by not allowing these guys to play. I think that's kind of, to me, that's your two. In order for the LIV series to really compete, I guess you could say, for the best players, and I'm talking about the ones in the prime of their careers, in order for that to happen, then some of this other stuff is going to have to work too, with ranking points and majors, access to the major golf championships. Otherwise, there's no allure of it for, you know, Justin Thomas or Rory or whoever that next guy is. There's no allure to jump and be the guy that kind of, you know, these guys took a step. There's no doubt about that, and they're getting criticized wholly for it. But at the same time, are you really going to miss, outside of maybe DJ, are you really going to miss any of those guys from just a regular tour stop? Not really. You know, is it hurting your feelings Sergio isn't there? No. Phil, I mean, let's be honest, he's 52. No. DJ's the one that kind of, maybe it does. And you know, when now you're talking about Patrick Reed and you're talking about Bryson DeChambeau, and who knows who this mystery man is. We'll find out on Monday, I guess, that's ranked inside the top 16. You know, who are these guys?
You're in the text?
Yeah, I was trying to see what it said. Yeah, I mean, there's tons of guys that never made the big, giant money that would take it. I think that's right.
I agree.
All right, NBA Finals Game 6 tonight. Is it over? When we walk in here tomorrow, are we talking about the Golden State Warriors' fourth championship, or are we wondering about a Game 7?
Because I picked Game 7, then I'm going to say it's not over. Because I picked a seven-game series, I'm going to stick by my pick there and say no. But However, let me talk out the other side here. I think Golden State, they smell blood in the water and they're circling right now.
Thought it was interesting that the footage of Steve Kerr in the locker room got released, talking about how were going to...
Was it a fake Steve Kerr or a real Steve Kerr?
Did you check that? By the way, update from that guy. I guess the fake Klay Thompson is a known thing.
Oh.
Like, he goes around town, like, impersonating him, taking pictures with fans and all kinds of
stuff.
Well,
he needs to go to Vegas and go on the strip.
Elvin.
Just like one of those guys, one of those street performers. But what'd you say? What happened to Kerr? What do you say?
He just talked about how they were
with
going
his
there.
Mask on.
It was going to be over, basically.
Oh.
But, that's certain things that are said in the locker room that probably doesn't need to be out there for public consumption. But it did get out, and you wonder if that lights a fire. You wouldn't think that the Celtics would need any motivation other than get back to Golden State for Game 7. To keep, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
But maybe that's a little bit extra. I just have a feeling, man, it's hard to think the Celtics, watching their offense the last two games, was just so...
been kind of anemic.
God, hard to watch.
Yeah.
But it's amazing what happens when a couple of guys can make some shots outside of, say, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and how much that can open things up and all of a sudden make you look like you're a competent offensive team. I think Boston's defense has been fine. Their offense just hasn't been there. Their offense has let them down. And kudos, some of the kudos go to Golden State's ability to guard and, quite frankly, Draymond Green's ability to just mess things up for the other offense. I mean, he's just a wrecking crew out there sometimes.
Literally.
When he's really playing. I mean, he just is. I have an inkling it's going back.
Okay.
Problem is, you also think at the other side of your brain, Golden State just won a game with Steph Curry not making a three for like the first time in his playoff career.
That sticks out to me.
And, oh, by the way, what number is the game, Jared?
This would be game 6.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
You know who normally shows up for game 6?
The real Klay Thompson.
The real one. By the way, the imposter made more shots than Klay did the other night. He made more shots than Steph did anyway.
True. But like I said, because I picked a 7-game series, I'm sticking with it. So I think Celtics barely, though.
It'd be nice.
Cuz I have to say that.
It'd be nice to get a game that wasn't a double-digit game. All
you
five.
Know what I think we will get tonight?
What?
Our last second shot type of ending.
Maybe we'll finally get a close game.
I think
we'll
get one.
Let's hope so. Or hope not, and then everybody can start watching hockey. Yeah. That would be the best thing about an ending tonight.
Yeah.
Let's get the NBA off the stage. Time for the NHL to take center stage.
Yep. We can start finally really breaking down our mock drafts.
Yeah, draft a week from tonight.
That's right.
Everybody have a great day. We'll be back to wrap up the week tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.